Hello, it's time once again for Our Story, occasional notes from the life, history, and lore of Bristol Bay and southwestern Alaska, brought to you by the Nushagak-Mulchatna Wood-Tikchik Land Trust, GCI, and the Dillingham Education Association. Fishing. It's what's done in Bristol Bay. Some years, there are so many fish that boats have to be put on limits. Other years, there seem to be no fish at all. Biologists scratching their heads. It's been life in Bristol Bay for more than 100 years.
From the 1890s to the 1950s, the commercial salmon fishery of Bristol Bay was exploited primarily by sailboats, in particular the Columbia River-type double-ended sailing gillnetter. The double-ender, as it's commonly known, was a craft of beauty. The boat was 28 to 32 feet long, constructed of rot-resistant Port Orford yellow cedar planking, graciously shaped by oak ribs and a hardwood keel. The beamy but sensual lines of the boat were complemented by the winged shape of its sprit-rigged sail. The charm of the double-ender sharply contrasts the iron-clad, big power, gadget and gizmo-driven gillnetter that dominates the bay today. The beauty of the double-enders, however, is not always the first memory of many of the old fishermen who sailed them. They were workboats, and in those days fishing was extremely hard, miserable work. The double-enders were open and exposed to the often cold and wet weather of Bristol Bay. Catching fish in them was arduous. Nets were set and pulled by hand, and the nets, made of water-absorbent linen and wax-coated wood floats, were heavy even without fish in them. All of this seems more incredible when you consider that fishing was generally a 24-hour-a-day, 6-day-a-week affair. 6 days in the rain, 6 days rolling on the waves, 6 days sleeping among the scales and fish slime, 6 days with only an unshaven, unbathed partner for company. Fishermen got a break on Sunday, but it was back out Monday for another 6 days. Providence made Bristol Bay the mother lode of the world's salmon fisheries, but it did so with a fiendish touch. In addition to being hard work, fishing is dangerous work, and the bay is one of the most dangerous fishing grounds in the world. To catch a fish, a bay fisherman must negotiate a maze of shallow waters, riptides, shifting sandbars, and windswept waves. Many fishermen have failed, a good number giving their lives in the effort. The task was especially difficult in a double-ender. Without power or access to a radio to call for help, a fisherman had to rely on his skill at the sail and tiller or on a strong back at the oars to avert tragedy. Death was always present, the invisible third deckhand. No wonder, in the lore of fishing in Bristol Bay, the sailing days represent a romantic era, the time of iron men in wooden boats, in contrast to the post-sailing period of today of wooden men in iron boats. As romantic as the sailboat may have been, it was nevertheless a craft of servitude. The double-ender was a boat preserved long beyond its obsolescence by a federal law that prohibited the use of motorized fishing craft in Bristol Bay, a law pushed and safeguarded by the salmon canneries. The law was sugar-coated as a resource protection measure, but in fact it was an industry protection measure. Each cannery owned a fleet of double-enders, decided who would get to fish in them, and towed the boats they owned with the fishermen they chose to the fishing grounds. Motorized power was finally legalized in 1951. Power bestowed independence on the fishermen, the ability to move quickly around the fishing grounds and sell to the cannery offering the best price. Motorized power reduced the leverage of the canneries over the fishermen, albeit perhaps only from a stranglehold to a wrist lock. Independence from the canneries, however, didn't come without a price. Motorized power also made the bay accessible to a lot more fishermen. And they came. Many of them. 20 years after the legalization of motorized power, limited entry was enacted to protect the bay from overfishing. Nearly 30 years after limited entry, the bay still seems overcrowded. For years there's been talk of buying back permits, but nobody has figured out how to do it yet. For these very reasons, some old fishermen lament the loss of the double ender. John Nicholson of Dillingham was one of them. He wrote a book called No Half Truths, and in it, he's not shy about his opinion. He wrote, "The reason I was against power boats was because every Tom, Dick, and Harry might fish. After legalization of power and the establishment of limited entry, it seems there are now twice as many fishermen. These include doctors, lawyers, and other professionals. It seemed all the pencil pushers started fishing. During sailboat days, they wouldn't have been able to fish because they might have been afraid to sail. The rigors of sailing and living in an open boat would have been overwhelming. I may be old-fashioned, but I still feel it's only those guys who know how to harness the wind really know how to fish." In the sailing days, everybody fished the same gear. The playing field was relatively even. The bounty of the fishery went to those with skill, courage, and knowledge. Today, better gear can make up for a lot of these attributes. Going back to sailboats may be the answer to the woes of Bristol Bay, but it is not one of the choices available. Perhaps in time, market forces or the tenacity of the salmon to defy all predictions will weed out some of the Toms, Dicks, and Harrys. Certainly a balance is needed. In the meantime, I can't help but wonder what it was like to fish in one of those double-enders. I imagine the sounds that have become extinct, the ripple and then the snap of the sail as the wind brings it taut, the clack of wooden corks spilling over the gunwale, the slap of waves against the cedar hull, or the creak of a bent mast sailing before a brisk wind. Or imagine the sounds that weren't heard, the chug of a diesel engine, the clatter and chat to the VHF radio, and the echo of waves wrapping an aluminum hull. Fishing in a sailboat must have been a quiet undertaking. And what about smells like damp wood and wet canvas, or even the smell of the sea itself? All gone, replaced by the odor of diesel fuel and gasoline. And finally, there is the vision of sails on the water. Dozens of sails, if not tens of dozens of sails. A sight never to be seen again. Of course, my imagination is colored by sunny days and blue skies. One old sailor, Judge Roy Madsen of Kodiak, told me his memories of fishing in Bristol Bay were gray, wet, and bone-chilling. The experience was so miserable, he said with a smile, that he went to law school so he wouldn't have to spend his life fishing. Yes, there was something about those sailboats. They made some good fishermen, and they made some good lawyers. For our story, I'm Tim Troll.